You're listening to the Clutter Fairy Weekly, a weekly webcast and podcast brought to you by the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas. If you'd like to participate in one of our live webcasts, please visit cfhou.com/weekly. You'll find a calendar of upcoming webcasts, as well as instructions for joining the Zoom meeting via the app or by phone. We'd love to see you. That URL again is cfhou.com/weekly. Now here's the weekly episode. Enjoy.
Hi, Clutter Fairy fans. This is the Clutter Fairy Weekly for May 30th, 2023. I'm your co-host, Ed Gumnick, and I'm speaking with Gail Goddard, certified professional organizer and owner of the Clutter Fairy in Houston, Texas.
Hi, everybody. The Clutter Fairy Weekly is the webcast and podcast that digs deep into the clutter that piles up between you and the life that you want to be living. We explore the habits and behaviors that lead to clutter, and we suggest strategies to slow the accumulation, reduce the collection, and comfortably manage the stuff we decide to keep.
If you're new to our Zoom meeting, we want to let you know that you can share your comments and questions via the chat, and I'll try to make sure Gail gets to them before we move on to another topic. You can also use the raise hand feature if you'd like to make a comment or ask a question yourself via audio or video. And we are streaming live on Facebook, so you can ask questions and leave comments there as well, and I'll relay them to Gail. We're going to start by talking about last week's weekly tittle, which was called, Oh, the Places You'll Go. The assignment was to make advanced preparations for your next trip or to plan a staycation. Let's hear from our participants in Zoom and on Facebook who worked on vacation-related organizing this week. Please let us know in the comments. We got lots of thoughtful feedback on last week's episode, including this travel packing suggestion from YouTube viewer CM. There was more to CM's handle than that, but it wasn't exactly pronounceable, so I'm leaving it at CM. CM wrote, I keep a wide laundry basket always filled with everything I will need to pack in my suitcase. I keep the filled basket ready for emergencies and the next trip on a trunk in a bedroom. The luggage I will be using, I keep stored inside the trunk. I can add and take out items and see everything more easily using a laundry basket than a piece of luggage. It also saves wear and tear on the luggage by protecting the luggage in the trunk until I move things from the laundry basket to the luggage at the last minute.
This is such a great packing suggestion for staging your items in advance. You can collect things as you think of them and adjust what actually goes on the trip when you're ready to pack the luggage itself, when it's time to start packing. I would add that you want to pick the laundry basket that's similar in capacity to the luggage you're actually going to pack, so it can signal you when the luggage is going to be full. You might just want to be able to know, okay, if the laundry basket is full, that means my luggage is now full and I don't have room to put clothes in. So you might want to know that as you're filling up your laundry basket.
Yeah, you definitely do not want to use your largest laundry basket.
Right.
Think about hauling that many clothes.
Right. All that stuff.
Diana said, most of my energy has been going to decluttering my overgrown garden. Does that count?
It does.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. It's a thing you want to accomplish, and you have a goal and it's a project, and go for it, man.
Well, and
it'll be beautiful.
And there's a real time sensitivity to it.
You
have to do that when you have to make hay while the sun shines, as they say.
And when you can survive being outside.
Right.
Totally true. If there's nothing else, then I'll go on. I want to make sure that we answered their any tittle responses.
One more. Says, I worked on a grab kit, which resulted in assessing my computer situation. I decided that there are certain irreplaceable apps I should have as backups on a disk or flash drive, as well as a hard drive that can go with me.
Oh.
This also led to working on the Tornado Safe Space.
Good for you.
That's terrific.
And I like the idea that, you know, in thinking about what needed to go with her and survive any, you know, escape, fast exit from the house, that she wanted to make sure that she had those apps available. And so she created a way to make that happen, which is great. That's wonderful. Good thinking.
Yeah. My laptop bag is always right near my laptop, so that if if we had to dash out of here really quickly, the laptop could go because it's pretty much where, you know, my whole business is.
Right, totally. And it's funny because I, you know, that's why I travel with the laptop when I travel, because I can't imagine leaving it at home and having something happen to it while I was out of town. So I take it with me everywhere that I go, because like, it can't die. It needs to survive for me to function. So yeah, can't even imagine losing the laptop.
Paula says, my week was one step forward, three steps back. Oh, sorry to hear that.
Oh,
sorted through my jewelry box and pulled items for donation. But then I went to the Friends of the Library book sale. Oops. $5 a bag.
Right.
$5 a bag meant 15 books made their way to my house. Good news is that all of them will go to little free libraries when I've read them.
There you go.
That's great. Well,
you have an attrition plan, right? Yes. You have a way to make it go away.
As long as you have a 15 in, 15 out plan working.
All is well. us book people, we like our books, man.
Oh, yeah. Anita says, I always use packing cubes. They make it so much easier to unpack when I arrive.
I agree with you.
I have never used packing cubes, but if you, I suppose you could also stage in your cubes. Can you do that?
Yeah, yeah.
And then move the cubes into the luggage at the last moment?
Yeah, yeah. Or, the cubes are basically soft-sided, you know, and it's just a way to contain the stuff and keep them from all flying around. And, you know, you pack like with like in the luggage, it's a way to add containers into the luggage. Right. And so it lets you pack like with like and keep some of things together. And, you know, here's all the electronic stuff, all the cables that I got to have, and that's all in one cube. And here's all my socks and underwear, and that's in a cube. And, you know, it's just a way to containerize inside the luggage.
Mel says, Tittle 169. Okay, staycation I did. Marinated and barbecued filet mignon, blueberry salad, garlic bread, then s'mores via a Uno chocolate bar. I'm not familiar with Uno chocolate bar with melted marshmallows rolled up inside a sugar ice cream cone. Num. Ooh, that sounds great.
I know. That sounds spectacular, actually.
I never thought of using an ice cream cone. That's a great way
to graham cracker, right?
Contain the mess. I just always have the s'more all over my chin. Right. I thought that was how you were supposed to do it.
I love that, but it's like it creates a container to hold the melted everything.
I'm gonna tell everybody another great s'more tip, which is Reese's dark chocolate thins.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the thins melt more easily than a standard peanut butter cup.
Oh, right.
And then dark chocolate, peanut butter in my preference. S'more, right? Yeah, and you get just a nice little bit of peanut butter.
Yeah.
Mel went on to say, all of this after I spent holiday weekend clearing outside yard, restaging carport, inside clearing my expired meds, foodstuffs into recycling bins.
Oh, so it was a reward for hard work done. Oh, yeah. Congratulations.
And she says,
so glad.
She says, thank you, Gail, Ed, and all for the inspiration to just stay home, be quiet, eat well, and be simply prosperous by getting outside in the sun.
That's wonderful. And boy, you got a lot done, because I know that driveway, I remember the picture of the carport with the stuff in it. And so if you got in there and shuffled and got through that stuff, good for you.
Tammy says, I started cleaning fridge. It's a week-long job.
Yeah. The fridge is always hard.
I totally understand. You know, it seems like it was 5 minutes ago that I did a fridge purge where, I kid you not, there were 6 dozen bottles and jars to be rinsed, emptied, rinsed, and recycled.
Right.
And Jaime informs me that it's time to do it again.
Darn it. Yeah, that's you know, it is a container that is actively used all the time, so it does take some effort to clean it.
Okay, one more comment and then we should get on, because we have a lot to talk about.
Okay.
Joy said, two big things unrelated to Tittle. One, on Saturday, two friends and I helped another friend who's been overwhelmed by many things, including the clutter piling up. We had a shame-free afternoon doing a few things to restore some sanity to the living space.
Oh, that was a lovely thing to do for her. That was great. I'm glad that it worked. I'm sure she was very grateful. And, you know, it's always better when you do it as a team, right? So it was great that you got some people over and you guys had a declutter party. Not probably not the best party theme ever, but very useful and helpful. So I'm glad that you did that.
I have a follow-up question about s'mores. Tammy says, do you warm them, Ed? Yes, I do. My sister has a fire, you know, one of those
little fire pits.
And I got a similar one, and it actually has about a, I don't know, maybe like a 4-inch wide flat surface that runs the way around the outside. And you just, you know, dust that off when you're ready to start with the s'mores and put your graham crackers there and your peanut butter cups on top of the graham cracker, and then roast your marshmallow. And by the time you've roasted your marshmallow, the peanut butter cup has softened and the graham cracker has warmed up.
That sounds perfect. Mm-hmm. Okay, the show's over. I got to go get graham crackers and resistance, right? It's time to make some s'mores right now.
Okay, last word on s'mores is that this weekend, Jaime brought home chocolate graham crackers.
Oh, even better.
And my life was changed.
Chocolate graham crackers. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Okay. I definitely got to have that.
Okay. We should probably talk about, you know, like
something organizing related.
Uh-huh. Just a little bit.
Oh my gosh. That's hilarious. Okay. So we have another topic. So next we're going to take a slight bend in the road here and related to last week's conversation. We'd love it when people write to us to tell us they agree with what we've been saying, but we learn a lot and get really great content ideas when people write to tell us what points we've missed on a topic. So an anonymous viewer wanted to present a rebuttal to part of our conversation last week, and I thought her points were so pertinent that I needed to share them with you all this week. So we were talking about how throwing everything out without thought was a stress response to being overwhelmed with clutter. Just like keeping everything and being frozen is also a stress response. Specifically, we discussed how throwing out stuff affected others in the house, because often things get thrown out without permission from the owner of the stuff. And I stated that this is usually traumatizing for the person whose things have been tossed out without their knowledge. And our viewer sent me this email, and it's a long email, but hang in there with me because it's worth it. I'm writing to present another side to an issue that seems to arise quite often on your podcast. You've said that some people hoard possessions because their parents threw their toys away without first asking how they felt about it. In a way, I am one of those parents. Our son refused to throw anything out. When we asked him if he wanted us to buy him the red toy or the blue toy, his reply was always that he wanted both. And foolishly, we would buy both. At the time of the purchase, I would tell him that he had to decide which of his dozens or hundreds of similar toys he would discard to make room for the new ones. He would agree, but then he would be so melodramatic about not being able to follow through with that agreement that once again, we buckled. The result, he had toys overflowing his room and into the basement. The same happened for his clothes. We had bins and bins filled with his old clothes downstairs, which he refused to allow us to discard or give away. Sadly, this continued into adulthood. Between the ages of 18 and 24, he made 3 moves. To help him, we bought him a set of household goods to get him going after the first move. Before he moved again, he came home with everything, and because it was too inconvenient, I'm saying in air quotes, for him to sort through his household goods and clothes from the piles he now had at home, we also bought him a whole new set of goods and a new wardrobe for each of his new locations. This happened twice, which meant that we now had a large basement completely and precariously stacked with old clothes, which hadn't even been washed, some of which dated back to elementary school, as well as old school notes, outdated gadgets, filthy household goods, and so on. Finally, after several years of being tormented by having to pick my way through the disaster in my basement and sick of his refusal to come to deal with it, I went through it myself. It took weeks. I went through every item and kept things that I thought would be truly valuable to him, but still ended up giving away or throwing out 4 or 5 large truckloads full of stuff. He feels, I know, right? He feels that I had no right to do this, but I feel that he had no right to leave everything in utter smelly chaos in my basement and refuse to either sort through it himself or to take it away. Note that he still has not taken the things that I did keep for him after an additional 5 years, but at least these things are now clean and neatly stored on shelves and take up only about a quarter of the basement. My position is that there comes a time when other people's stuff in my space is an abuse of our relationship. And if I want to protect my own mental well-being, I should be able to address the issue myself. So after I read this, I had so many competing thoughts at once that my head kind of exploded. Hence the, you know, first she admits that in dealing with her young child and his refusal to give everything away, she and her husband buckled under the extreme reaction. A child has a hard time with regulating emotions, and clearly separating from his things created stress for him as a child. But buckling in the face of his reaction and continuing to buy him what he wanted without ever releasing anything taught the wrong lesson. The son who dumped everything back in his parents' basement in a messy, dirty, scrambled, unwashed pile clearly didn't see a great value in the individual items themselves. He wasn't concerned with keeping things clean or boxing them properly for storage. So it's hard to argue that he really valued everything except as one huge pile of stuff. He learned the wrong lesson about owning things this way. So I want to say it's important to keep trying to teach the idea of letting go of things when it makes sense, when they outgrow the clothes, when they outgrow the toys, when they learn enough to step up in the books, like they, you know, you have reading levels and they graduate in reading levels to more sophisticated books. Kids need help in understanding and facing their fear of loss, and they need to experience giving things away. That's how they'll learn that they can survive it, and it won't be awful on the other side of donating stuff away. So that was the first point that came out of that old email. Second, she knows she compounded the growth of the collection in her basement by not making him go through the collection from the first move and just buying him all new things for each of the 3 moves. She essentially bought everything that ended up in the basement herself. It just went through her son's apartments first. Finally, after living with a dirty mess in the basement for years that consisted of all the things she had bought for her son, she'd finally had it and cleaned the basement out, taking a big effort on her part to reclaim the space. Now, her son feels like she had no right to do it, but I'm saying that in this case, I totally agree with her actions. The son had 3 different moves to reclaim what she'd originally saved from his childhood, plus to reclaim what had ended up there after each move. He did not deal with his belongings at any point, nor did he go to the basement and clean up and properly store his stuff. So in this case, I think he was certainly taking advantage of his mother and her basement, even though he is a grown man in his 30s now. If he really wanted those things that badly, he should have taken responsibility for them and either helped his mother go through, clean, and properly store everything in the basement, or he should have removed the stuff to where he lives now or to a storage unit. So I think his claim that she has no right to clear out the basement is a false claim. He had many chances to keep everything. He has grown and gone from her house. It's her basement, not his storage unit. And she had paid for all the stuff for him anyway. He didn't buy most of it. So I agree that he was abusing their relationship and being disrespectful to his mother over this stuff. And he was trained as a young person with an expectation of indulgence in this way. But I say mom had a right to evolve her needs around this and to decide it was time to reclaim her space and not accept being a dumping ground anymore. She did not need to be the dumping ground forever. I'm very glad she did it because she's now satisfied with how her basement looks and it's greatly reduced her stress. And it was totally worth it, in my opinion, and her right to do so. Thanks so much for sharing your story with us. It made several valid points that just screamed out to me that they needed to be said here. So I really appreciate the prompting to discuss the point of view. I'm sure he's a lovely young man. This is just one aspect of his life. I'm sure he's a wonderful person. And he was not being a grown-up around this. And he was not acting like a grown-up around the things that his mother and dad had helped him acquire and use. And so I'm calling him out. I think I'm calling him out and saying, yeah, you're a grown-ass man. Sorry for, you know, he's grown up and he needs to be dealing with it and not be leaving a mess for his mother to clean up. And if he had gone and like, I don't want to get rid of anything, but it's important enough to me to go and A, clean it and B, properly store it and to help my mother with my stuff in her basement. That would have been an option. Like he could have claimed the things and said, too expensive to have a storage unit. I need to leave it in the basement, but let me come and make it be functionally stored and not be dirty. And so that you can use your basement, let me come and support you in making that work. That would have been an option. It wouldn't have been my first choice either, but it would have been an option that was reasonable. But the fact that he ignored it several times when he had the opportunity to get into it is what crosses the line for me, so that it is really, no, he's just taking advantage. He's just taking advantage, and she had every right to do what she did. And I will circle back also and say, I talk about having things thrown away as a kid, being traumatizing and sort of informing how you function as an adult around stuff sometimes. But that was only the first part of his story.
Right.
That they talked about trying to get rid of stuff, but they would never actually do it. And so after he was grown up and out of the house, then we were having a different conversation. It had evolved beyond the throwing out my stuff is going to traumatize me. And now it's like, okay, but you're grown up and you have to deal with it. Like you have to step up and decide how you're going to deal with it and not just leave it for your mother to deal with. Okay. Did I miss anything?
Well, most of the responses in the chat so far have been team mom.
All right.
Susie, but there are other perspectives as well. Susie said he is old enough to deal with his stuff, so I don't think he has a right to complain now. The follow-up question I would like to ask is, did she communicate to him that she was getting ready to do this purge in the basement? And that she didn't say that, but assume.
No, yeah.
Yeah, she didn't say that explicitly, but Amanda says, yikes, dear listener, your basement is not your adult child storage unit. Your patience is admirable, and I hope you don't feel guilty despite what he's saying to you.
Right, because you have every right. And she did all the work that he should have done. She kept some of the stuff. She cleaned it. She boxed it. She labeled it, and it's there. So no complaining.
And it sounds like she spent most or all of the money in the first place to acquire the stash.
Yes, 100%.
Rejoice says, I wish my parents had taught me those skills as a child. Mm. Actually, it would have fallen on my mom because dad's side of the family never learned it either.
Yeah, sometimes that's part of the drill, right? Like if your parents are modeling that behavior of it's terrifying to give things away, if they're acting out of fear of loss, scarcity mentality, then they're going to teach that to you. And so as an adult, then you actively have to, talk yourself out of that. You have to work to ingrain a new belief system around it. And it's hard if your parents don't have the skill set. It's true.
Samudra says, I remember asking mama why I couldn't have something I saw in the aisle at the cash register. Because we're poor, she said, with a touch of irony. I could read shades of emotion even at three, but didn't always know what they signified. I understood that we weren't living in poverty, but couldn't have everything we wanted just because we wanted it.
Right. Yeah. And the idea, do you want red or blue toy, the red toy or the blue toy? And he says both and he gets both. Like, that's like, oh man, you just like, you doubled the amount of clutter by not sticking to your guns and saying, you only get one. Yeah. Like, right. And so there's all kinds of places where she sort of trained him with the wrong message. And then she lived with the results, right? Like she paid for it in blood and sweat in clearing out the basement later. So I'm sure it was a horrendous project. And there's nothing like, young adult male funk How they, you know, they make it dirty and they leave it there. And so I'm shuddered to think about how much cleaning she had to do and laundry she had to do and cleaning out the dishes and the, oh my gosh, I'm sure it was a huge, exhausting project. And so I, you know, kudos to her for sticking with it and making it happen. And I'm sure she earned it. She did the work herself, and she's living with the results, which is she made the environment peaceful to her in her own house, which is exactly what my point. She was entitled and she did it, and I'm glad.
M says, I agree that the son was at fault, but maybe he got mad because he didn't feel like he was warned of the upcoming change. And that was kind of the point I was making too, is to, you know, what was the communication? Of course, the counter argument to that is that there were several moves.
Every time there was a move happening,
a long process of accretion, and he maybe should have seen it coming. He is an adult,
right?
And the idea that it's like, as an adult, yeah,
I can't be bothered to go deal with my own mess that I made and dumped in my mother's basement. Therefore, the solution is for you to just buy it off of me again. Now, you know, I also don't know whose idea that was, but like I said, if it was that valuable to him, he should have gone back in the basement and retrieved the things that he wanted when he went to the next apartment. And if he didn't, then, you know, yeah. Okay.
Naomi says, even if the parent indulged the son, I'm going to be the armchair psychologist and say he needs professional help with his issues.
He might need some support at this point, right?
Right. Yeah, well, because it sounds like he has a muddled,
strong attachment,
but it's sort of a muddled relationship with his stuff. It's a strong attachment, but not strong enough to get him to take responsibility for it.
Yeah, or to clean it, or to keep it, or, you know, yeah, all that. Like the idea that I just like scoop it all up dirty in a mess and go throw it in the basement and call it enough and never come back to it. Yeah. Yeah. That's the part that's confusing. And so, maybe he, you know, he needs some support and modeling around, you know, he needs some training as an adult around how to interact with stuff and how to feel about stuff and, you know, basic organizing principles. And he can certainly go and get that.
Right.
And in the meantime, his mother cleared out her basement. So thank you guys. I really appreciate you letting me have this conversation about it, because I thought it was important.
Let me let Amanda have the last word on this one.
She
agreed with Naomi and said, and if he chooses not to seek that help, his parents need to be firm with boundaries to protect their own space.
Right. He doesn't get to re-deliver a new mess into the basement.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely. I think you have to have a hard line about that now. Like, yeah, no, you need to go rent a storage unit, son. You're a grown man. It's now your problem to manage, not ours. And you have your own solution out there that doesn't involve our house. I think that's a very valid point. Having boundaries around that is super important now. Because he's going to push that boundary, I'm sure. I'm sure he's absolutely going to try to do that. So,
right.
Yeah. Good point. Thank you.
Because the fact that she did it all herself means that he's had no learning other than some of my stuff is now gone.
Yeah. 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 He didn't experience the cleaning, is what you mean.
Right. Right.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Okay. We should move on to our main topic.
Okay.
Clutter is more than just an annoyance or inconvenience. It can adversely affect our health and well-being in dozens of ways we might not even be aware of. Today, we're going to discuss the impacts of clutter on our physical, emotional, and psychological health, and the health benefits of taking control of our spaces.
I have been in so many houses where the density of stuff is really great, and I find it hard to believe that people can stand to live in it. I can work in these spaces because I don't live there, and I can go home at the end of the day to my own space that doesn't stress me out. So it's just a project to me. But for those that live in a highly cluttered space, I often think they must be stressed out all the time living in the chaos. On some level, we just get used to it up until the chaos reaches our overload level, and then we really freak out. We've talked about how clutter affects health and mental well-being in other shows, but not as a collective talk. So we thought we'd put all of those effects into a list. In the in the thought that thinking about all of these effects at once might help spur you to action to reduce the strain that your clutter has on your life. Ed found some great articles about this, so we pulled some research from several sources to make our list here. So the first effect that it has on people is increased anxiety levels. Clutter contributes to feelings of guilt, frustration, and anxiety. And I also believe feeling overwhelmed triggers feelings of anxiety, because when we feel overwhelmed, we don't know what to do about it. And that makes us anxious too. There's nothing really scientific there. It's just my observation from being in the field for 15 years. Being around all that clutter increases people's anxiety levels. There's also an increased stress hormone response. So there's research from 2009 in the United States that showed that living in a cluttered space increases levels of the stress hormone cortisol, creating a constant low-level fight or flight response. Increased cortisol levels has a lot of detrimental physical side effects over time. There's all kinds of research about how staying in fight or flight continuously instead of as a random spike every once in a while when the tiger's chasing you, if you stay in it all the time, then it creates all kinds of bad side effects. So the longer you stay in it, the more it negatively affects your body. And it just like I'm super stressed at work all the time. If you're coming home and your house is stressing you out, it's contributing to that raised up cortisol level that's causing you physical side effects. There's also an effect to sleep. It creates sleep issues. People that are sleeping in a cluttered bedroom are more likely to have trouble falling asleep and staying asleep. They suffer from more sleep disturbances. That low-grade stress is invading your sleep cycle too. It also affects your ability to focus. A visually cluttered space affects our ability to focus on anything when it's like really overwhelming. It creates a similar overload effect as when there's too many noises happening in a room to focus on anything. And it made me think of when I'm in the car and I'm driving down the road and I have the radio on, or there's, you know, talking on the, or singing on the radio, and I get lost, or I'm not sure what exit, I get confused about what's happening. And the first thing I do is turn the radio off.
Right.
Because I don't need extra distracting thoughts while I'm trying to get clear. And so I think of the visual overload of clutter in one space is similar to too much noise makes it hard to focus, right? It's the same kind of thing. The research is showing that disorganization and clutter can have a cumulative effect on the brain. Our brains like order, and constant visual reminders of disorganization drain our cognitive resources and reduce our ability to focus. The visual distraction of clutter increases our cognitive overload and can reduce our working memory. So it's messing with your mind as well, which is shocking. It makes you less productive because it triggers coping and avoidance strategies. As you are in the space and you're overloaded by it, you start to go to your stress response coping mechanisms and avoidance strategies. So you end up zoning out with a T-bone.
Unhealthy coping strategies.
Yes, unhealthy ones. Yeah, yes. Like
binge like watching TV or
like Netflix and snacks, right?
Yeah.
And so you end up watching the television or snacking and not getting anything done, or going down the YouTube rabbit hole, or just staying calling all of your friends, or whatever you do that triggers you to try to cope and try to avoid dealing with what's in front of you. And so it makes you less productive. From a physical point of view, cluttered spaces are really difficult to navigate. You know, I find that as I'm working in somebody's space, you know, if there's narrow trails, you know, I'm a little wide. I cannot, you know, I'm like the dog's tail, like my rear end knocks things off as I try to go through pathways. And so if it's hard to move through the house, or you have to be careful everywhere you go in the house, it takes that much more effort and energy out of you. These spaces are also trip and fall hazards as well. It makes it more likely that you could be hurt in the house. And it also means that if you do get hurt, it's going to be that much harder for EMS to come to your rescue. They come to you with tons of equipment and a crazy shaped stressor. And if you can barely walk down the hall or get up the stairs, then the EMS is going to have a terrible time getting to you when you need help. You got to know it increases allergies and asthma, right? If you live in a cluttered space, you can't reach everything to clean it very well. Big piles means more dust everywhere that you can't reach and more places for bugs to hide out. Besides dust, the cluttered spaces might be good places for mold and mildew to grow, depending on how the piles of stuff are affecting the airflow through the house, or they might hide water leaks for a while. In Texas, we have monster-sized roaches, and the roach poop is its own kind of dust allergen. It triggers a lot of allergy response. If the clutter is dense enough that you have larger problems like mice, or the house develops a toxic level of mold, then it's another level of biohazard you're breathing in. You may think you're used to it, so it's not a problem, but it's just putting extra stress on your lungs and your ability to breathe well. Why would you want to make it harder for your lungs to cope with the environment that you spend the most time in? This was a really odd piece of research that I was surprised about. Clutter can trigger overeating. I said that. A 2016 study by researchers at Cornell University found that women in a cluttered kitchen tended to eat twice as many calories from snacks as women in a tidy kitchen. Researcher Brian Wansink summarized his team's findings by saying, the notion that places such as cluttered offices or disorganized homes can be modified to help us control our food intake is becoming an important solution. Shocking to me, but I can see it. I can see that if you're trying to tune out chaos in the kitchen, grabbing a snack seems like a good idea.
Well, and there's also just maybe the issue of availability. If the stuff is sitting out, you know, if
you can see it,
health, if, you know, bowl of fruit is the only thing you can see, you're going to be more likely to eat from the bowl of fruit,
right,
than the, you know, the bag of potato chips, you know.
And also I'm thinking about cooking surface. If the clutter is
crazy, if
on the snack counter.
Yeah. If preparing meals is much more difficult than snacking, you're going to snack.
Right.
And of course, snacks, you can snack healthily, but
it's harder.
It's harder. Yeah.
It's harder if you don't have a surface to prep it on. Right. And so I can totally see why that would be true. That was just a fascinating one that I would never have come up with on my own.
I found that really interesting.
Yeah. And then there's one more on our list, impaired learning. A study from Carnegie Mellon University found that students in decluttered classrooms perform 13% better on tests than children in disorganized classrooms. The study focused on classrooms, but it seems reasonable to suppose that the home environment in which children study and do homework would also have an impact on learning. So how amazing is that? If you're in a disorganized classroom, in a cluttered classroom, it's harder for you to focus on tests. Makes perfect sense to me. If you can't focus well because there's too much going on, you know, you can't do your best on a test. Amazing to me, but makes perfect sense. The short conclusion here is that a cleaner, less cluttered space helps your body function well and your mind work more effectively. If you're living in a cluttered space and suffering mental or physical symptoms from that environment, then consider getting organized as a way to avoid going to the doctor and to start feeling better. I know it's a lot of work, but everything you clear out and clean out will improve your well-being in countless ways.
Niz said if he wanted to keep it, he should rent a storage place and pay for it. Diana said, when I was away at college, my mom, without telling me in advance, got rid of everything I had left at home. I've never quite gotten over that.
Right. It is a shocker. And that's when I would have said, okay, I'm going to do this. You know, we're going to go through this stuff.
Yeah.
I'm going to, you know, a better plan would have been, we're going to look through the stuff when you come home at Christmas and when you're on spring break, whatever, we're going to look at this stuff. And then I'm going to go through and get rid of what you don't want, to do it as a project together, or to at least get the person's feedback about first. Would have been a better plan.
Leela added, first, I think the young man showed a lack of thankfulness. Second, I'm so glad I don't have a basement or usable attic. Seems to prevent a lot of problems and choices for me as far as collecting things.
Right? It's just another space to put things if you have a basement or an attic.
Yeah.
Totally true.
You know, and I have wondered about the extent to which the clutter problem, at least in the United States, has been enabled, if not promoted, by the growth in the size of homes in the United States, because the average size of a house in the United States has gotten dramatically larger over the last 50 or 60 years.
Mm-hmm. That's totally true.
So just the fact that that space is there to fill up might be helping to create the problem.
And it allows people to get to a much greater level of chaos before they run out of space and before they are drastically impeded from functioning in the house. And so it means that they don't have to react until way farther down the line.
Yeah, you can let it go a lot longer.
Yes.
When you've got that spare bedroom that you can just shut the door on.
Right. Or the basement you can fill up. 100%.
Ginger said, my parents had 8 children. I don't remember our home being cluttered. Mom got rid of stuff all the time. I don't remember anyone getting upset about it.
Which is good. And she probably was not, she didn't get rid of 100% of anything, right? She would get rid of a little bit of anybody's stuff, but not all of one person's stuff. And so she was modeling that, you know, sort of in and out behavior that everybody needed to learn. So it worked better.
Linda in Pennsylvania has, as she often does, wrapped it all up nicely together. Both of the topics we've been talking about. She says, hoarded spaces like this basement are a true safety hazard. Mom was correct to make it safe by clearing it out.
Yeah. And you know, the thing about basements is in attics, it gets too hot and things get cooked. In basements, they flood and things get destroyed and mildew grows.
Or at least get damp. Even if you're not in a place where it floods, they do tend to be damp unless they've been really well sealed.
Right. And so it's a place that is going to be a safety hazard no matter what, if you're not careful, if it's not well managed. And so she's right. I think it was a safety hazard and she needed to do what she did. And I'm glad she did.
Anya says, I think the mom should own up to her past mistakes seriously, having announced to her son what she planned to do. And she voluntarily took his stuff in. She could have stopped him way earlier.
It's true. So she totally, she participated. Absolutely. Yeah, and she claims and owns that stuff in her email that she contributed. She knows.
Yeah.
And we all have participated on some level, right?
Yeah.
In stuff that doesn't work and then get on the other side and go, wow, that was a mistake. I made this situation happen.
Maureen, who's with us on Facebook, said, my wonderful late mom had asked me repeatedly to get things out of their basement, even after I was out of the house. On the day after he retired, my dad called and said there were some things for me in my backyard. I came home to find all those belongings on my patio, including my wedding dress, luckily boxed. Lesson learned.
Another parent that had reached his limit.
It's saturation.
The end, right? Well, but it's like parents try to get kids to face the chore, to deal with the chore, and kids resist. Out of sight, out of mind. It's not at my house. It's not my problem, right? I mean, it's a typical response to go, yeah, yeah, I don't have time for that. Whatever. You want me to do a chore. I don't want to do a chore. But I love it. The dad was like, fine, we'll just put it on the car and take it to your house here.
There you go.
This is why we didn't want it in our house anymore, because it's a hot mess and you need to deal with it.
My parents were never that pushy, but occasionally if I'd said, yeah, we'll take that. Later on, dad be like, well, let's just go ahead and put that in the car right now.
Right. Because off it goes. It's going home with you, buddy.
I don't want you to forget it. Janet says, I also feel that the mom could have trained him better. I am a single mom and was firm about decluttering.
And it sounds like his response, he was a kid that had a much greater emotional response to letting go. And so he needed some careful coaching and training around the experience of letting it go. It isn't like he just, it isn't that she never tried, but I think that they gave up earlier. They gave up early when he very clearly needed to experience it and needed to be trained slowly over time to deal with how he feels about it and process it. And so,
yeah.
And they just, you know, that wasn't a challenge that they picked up to deal with it. They just, in the interest of moving on, they ignored that process. And so,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, you know, he's having to live with the results of being indulged and not being trained.
Well, yeah. You know, there was that opportunity to choose between the red and the blue toy. And it could have been a learning experience that, yeah, sometimes life is going to present you with choices and you will have to pick something.
And you don't get 100% of it.
And sometimes sometimes you'll make a choice you regret, but those are things that we have, you know, difficult lessons we have to learn
in life. Exactly. Yeah. So
back on the subject of health and well-being, Samudra said, it's hard to cook when the sink is full of dirty dishes.
Yes.
So clutter affects diet, which affects health.
100%.
Yeah. Dirty dishes, workspace available, you know, having your cookware and tools accessible, not stuffed into cabinets that are overflowing.
Difficult to reach.
Yeah.
Well, and the whole, like, if you muster up enthusiasm to cook for yourself, there's nothing that will drain that enthusiasm faster than having to spend 30 minutes doing dishes in order to get the sink clear so that you can use the knife that you want and find the skillet that you want. And, you know, like, that is going to shut down your enthusiasm really fast if you have to stop and do dishes in order to start cooking. And that has torpedoed more than one person from their enthusiastic idea of, I'm going to go cook now for myself. And then, you know, they show up and they got to clean first. And that'll derail a lot of people's enthusiasm about cooking.
Samudra also said, consider that sleep issues may produce psych issues, which then create clutter dysfunction.
100%.
We talked about it a bit, that it can be a sort of a negative feedback loop where your clutter gets a little out of control and it makes you feel, and you have psychological, you have emotional reactions to that only make it worse, that only make it harder for you to get an emotion on the clutter you need to deal with.
Well, and sleeping. Go ahead.
That was pretty much what I had to say on that.
But, sleeping is so necessary for the proper functioning of your body and mind, right? Like, you need a good night's rest for all of your systems to reset themselves and be ready to go the next day. And there's a reason why our body works that way. And if you're not getting good sleep, then you're not waking up with a restored mind in order to go make decisions, to make better choices. It affects everything down the line if your sleep is disrupted and you're not getting a full night's sleep. And so, you know, in the extreme, people that are sleep deprived develop psychosis, you know, like somebody that doesn't get to sleep or is prevented from sleeping for a really long time. Your brain starts to, you know, go off the rails. So in the short term, in just regular life, if you're sleeping 4 hours or 6 hours instead of eight, then you slowly over time degrade, you know, how well your brain can work because it's not getting the proper rest.
Joyce says clutter can trigger overeating 100%. And Marcy concurred, clutter and overeating absolutely go together. It is a feeling of overwhelm and depression, which causes emotional eating. And Samudra said, I think they're comorbid. I'm now a pot calling the kettle black. I've noticed how many hoarders also carry excess weight.
There was some research about that that I didn't actually quote, but it showed that people that were living in hoarding situations were like 77% more likely to be overweight. The research didn't explain, they didn't figure out what the link was, why. They couldn't explain why. They had just noticed from a statistical standpoint.
Right. So it's
that was true.
Statistical finding. They don't know what
the causality is yet. Yeah. That wasn't part of the research directly, but yeah, it's fascinating and it makes perfect sense to me. And being overweight makes it harder to clean. It makes you want to move less. And it's another one of those, you know, you spiral down because each one makes the next thing harder. And so trying to reverse that spiral back is worth the effort. Which is why it seems like when you declutter, other things start to get better as well. You know, like you declutter something and then you feel better emotionally and you sleep more and it has the positive effect of changing all of those, to the better when you can make yourself get in there and do some of the cleanup work that you need to do.
Yeah. This is where we probably should throw in our standard disclaimer that we are not mental health professionals
or doctors.
We're only talking from our own experience
100%.
And observations.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we are merely making suggestions that we hope will help you find the solution that works for you.
Right. Exactly.
Anya added, cortisol also lets people put on weight. I don't think I knew that one.
That's one of the effects. Weights, like it's sort of like your body thinks that it has to store more stuff because you're in trouble and something's wrong and you're in danger. And so it makes you store more fat somehow. It's part of the, you know, oh my God, you're going to die. We must need to store more stuff.
Rejoice says, as a clutter heavy teacher, I can definitely admit that it affected my relationships with some of my hyper organized co-teachers.
Oh yeah.
You know, sure. and we really didn't talk much today about the damage that clutter can do to your relationships
mental side effect
function of, something that has an impact on your health and well-being.
Yeah.
Because adding more stress to your relationships has all kinds of other negative consequences.
Yeah. And I watched one of the hoarding shows one time where they were talking about this husband and wife and the place was a disaster and he was the hoarder and she was not. And the stairwell came down and turned around, you know, and there was stuff all along the stairs and she was coming down and slipped on something on the stairs and broke her foot and had to have a cast and then had to be like in a cast on crutches in that environment. And it was really the last straw for her. Like after that, she was like, I can't live here. I can't live like this. She had been living with it as it was, but getting hurt by the clutter was her sort of hard line. That was where she had enough. And as a result, she left the house and she really, in order to recuperate, she needed to leave the house because she couldn't really maneuver in the house on the crutches she was wearing at the time. And so it definitely affected their relationship after it physically affected her. And so, yeah, it gets in the way all over the place.
Pat said, a lot of people chiming in on me about bigger homes leading to more clutter. And Pat said, plus the amount of storage units that are so easily available, this makes it easy to fill one up and ignore all the stuff.
Right. Although now we've sort of reached this moment in time where the demand for storage has gotten high and the price of the storage has gotten high. And so it's starting to not be like the super cheap, easy solution anymore. It's a little bit more expensive to store it all now. And so people that are spending a lot of money on storage are more prompted to clear out, get rid of it. But it has to get to that expensive pain threshold.
Yeah, it has to. It has
for them to notice, right?
Yeah, it has to reach your breaking point when it's going up enough times. Yeah,
that it's too painful. Yeah.
May says, my house turned 100 this year. I am single and can clutter with the best of them and use spare rooms. She adds the ceilings are higher too. So in the older houses, sometimes in the older houses, you can go further up with your clutter.
Right. Yeah. But then it just means that it's a little, precarious and more likely to fall on you. So pay attention. Don't get yourself trapped in there.
Okay. We have used up just about all of our time and we have more things we need to talk about, like next week.
Yes.
So we won't have a regular episode of the Clutter Fairy Weekly next week because Gail will be in Austin for a NAPO board meeting. But I'm going to open up the Zoom meeting at the usual time to anyone who would like to use the hour to get some decluttering or organizing work done in the company of other people who are doing the same thing. I'll deputize a few participants as co-host, and then I will probably run off to do other things, but I'll be available to jump in if I'm needed during the hour, if there's any kind of a problem. And I'll share contact information with anyone I've deputized. This session will serve as a sort of test drive for our plan to offer co-working sessions on a regular basis. Our next regular meeting will be in 2 weeks on Tuesday, June 13th at the usual time. Watch your email in the coming days for the announcement of a topic for that show. Gail, why don't you give us a tittle?
Okay, this week's tittle, a healthy point of view. This week's assignment is to survey your living space from a health and well-being perspective. Schedule an appointment with yourself to conduct a health and well-being audit of your home. Plan to spend at least a couple of minutes in each room. Carry a clipboard or a notepad and a pen or pencil on your walkthrough so you can jot down any observations or action items that you'd like to record. Thinking in terms of the issues that we've discussed in today's episode, make a note about anything that strikes you as detrimental or potentially harmful to your health and well-being, such as items or spaces that are prone to collecting dust, items or spaces that are difficult to keep clean, anything that might impede free movement or the functioning of the space, anything that feels visually distracting or overstimulating, anything that triggers a feeling of stress or anxiety, anything that triggers any other negative response from you, such as shame, guilt, embarrassment, tension, worry, and so on. So make a plan and book time to address each of these issues that arose to the surface during your audit. So you want to walk around and make the audit, find the things that are potentially affecting your physical and mental well-being, and then make a plan to work on those projects to try to improve the environment, improve the situation for you. If nothing else, focusing on the fact that it's affecting your health and your mental functioning maybe is another incentive for you to get going. Maybe it's not enough that you want the space to look pretty, but maybe thinking about, this is making it hard for me to breathe, this is making it unsafe for me to walk, has more impetus to it than what you're using as an inspiration right now.
Yeah, you might find some affirmations in this tittle, like when I get rid of this dusty collection, I will feel better and breathe easier.
Mm-hmm.
All right. If you're watching this on YouTube, we would love for you to join us live. To get notifications about upcoming events, we invite you to join the meetup group by visiting cfhou.com/meetup. You can also follow us on Facebook by visiting cfhou.com/Facebook or join our mailing list by visiting cfhou.com/subscribe. We love to hear from you, so please keep your questions, comments, and topic suggestions coming on YouTube, Facebook, or anywhere that you find us. You can always reach us through our website at clutterfairyhouston.com.
Thanks everybody for joining us today. We really appreciate that you come and talk to us, and we will be back in 2 weeks. But if you want to come and have some fun with your decluttering friends next week, you can come at the same time, and we will see you then. Bye.
Bye-bye.